I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined today by Mr. Billy Paulhan. What's up, Billy?
Hey, Zach. It's good to be back. Way back in season two, I was a guest, and I had a lot of fun, and we talked about doing it again, and then, you know, life happened, but I'm here now, so...
That's right.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Not so long in the show's time, but a long time in our time, in the real world.
Yes. A long time in our time.
Well, nice to have you back, man. So we're talking about Resurrection this week. Give me thoughts on this episode. Is there a specific, like, fond memory or not so fond memory? What are your just kind of first impressions of this episode, man?
Honestly, rewatching it was just kind of average. I mean, like... It worked, but it felt kind of like a freak of the week sort of scenario. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but I liked it enough.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll delve into it deep here, but you know, in Smallville, The Official Companion, season 3 by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. You know, some of the producers had some interesting comments on this episode. Which is, it's interesting to me because it kind of reveals some of the history of why they went the way they did with Adam. Executive producer and creator Al Goff had this to say about Resurrection and how Adam Knight's plot line from Asylum was supposed to actually happen. So there's no talk of Bruce Wayne here, as we've been joking about on the show. But there is this. He says, quote, "It was supposed to be a legitimate relationship. Lana had broken up with Clark and she was going to have another boyfriend. But the nature of the actor and the chemistry wasn't working. It made us go into a more thriller Pacific Heights-like direction." That's a movie with Michael Keaton that I've never seen, but I guess it's about something like this. "You've got a tenant that you can't get rid of. What is he doing? Unfortunately, it then devolved into more sci-fi than we ever wanted to go. It was very generic in a weird way." So that's interesting to me that their intentions with Adam was supposed to be, he's just supposed to be another normal guy that she got in a relationship with, but I guess they didn't like the chemistry between Christian Kirk and Ian Somerhalder. And I gotta say, we've been joking about it here on the recent episodes, but it is kind of like, what their relationship is like, what is this? Like, are they friends? Are they dating? What did you think of Lana and Adam together, Billy?
Yeah, it was weird. I definitely felt like they were trying to push that, you know, Lana is into this guy because, of course, Lana's into every guy. Well, that, and then ultimately comes back to Clark until she doesn't. And then, I don't know. Yeah, it did feel very sci-fi. Like, it was just really weird to me from everything I remember. And then just, it's also weird just seeing how Ian Somerhalder would later go on to more fantasy route with sort of fantasy and Lost, and then full on in Vampire Diaries.
Uh-huh. Well, they might not like them on Smallville, but the CW certainly liked them, or the WB at that time, because yeah, I don't know how long Vampire Diaries ran for, but it was a nice little. Nothing's going to run as long as Supernatural, right? For Lana's boyfriend next season. Lana's boyfriend this season had his own show too, and he did pretty well for himself. And then, you know, to kind of cap it all off, Goff finishes off the story. "The arc with Adam was 6 episodes that wanted to be one thing it didn't get there, which was frustrating." And I gotta laugh because in this episode, right, we see Adam, but we don't see Ian Somerhalder. We see his stunt double, like in a cage in the shadow. Like, we didn't want to pay him for this week to just be an extra. So Adam's plot line does resolve next week. Now, I said this last week. I get where they're trying to explain everything here with the liver and all that stuff, but I think the coolest ending for his character would have been if it was the last scene we saw him, it was just that hallway where Lionel walks off and in front of all the lights, he's like, leave me here. Like, that would have been a really creepy, depressing ending for him. But instead, he comes back next week in Crisis and Julie Blaine. But we'll get to that next week. This week, we're talking about Resurrection. Now, Resurrection, it is kind of like a run-of-the-mill episode. It's interesting. We're going to get a episode, we're going to get a movie plot as an episode plus one on the tally board, because this plot is John Q, which is a Denzel Washington movie from the early 2000s, a couple years before this episode, where his son needs a heart transplant, but their insurance won't cover it, so he kind of takes the hospital hostage. And that's why I always remember this, because it came out right before this episode, like a year, maybe two. And that's what it always made me think of. And I thought, in rewatching here, I was kind of surprised, because from my memory, it was like, oh yeah, this is the one where the kid takes the hospital hostage, and I was thinking that's going to be like most of the episode. It's really like only the last third, right?
Yeah, it really is. Most of the time, it's just finding how the guy's brother got resurrected and, you know, finding the secret lab and everything. And then it turns into like, okay, he's got a kryptonite bomb on his chest. And yeah, he's taking hostages. And of course, Clark has to come in and save the day, because he always has to save the day. You know, that's what he does.
Yeah, it's one of those where you remember like the one thing that was so, you know, big in your memory, but then you rewatch, you're like, oh, I guess that was just one part of the episode. But to your point, which is kind of like, there's a lot of people running around, having conversations, doing things, not much really happening until the end there. But before we really jump into it, I do want to talk about some of the guest stars here, because they do have some importance. So the main guest star, I guess, who plays Garrett, the John Q of this episode. this actor's name is James Kirk. I kid you not. This guy's name is James Kirk. So I assume his parents were Star Trek fans or something, because he was born in 1986. So it's plenty of time for people to grow up on Star Trek, be fans. My last name was Kirk. I mean, I couldn't help but name my son James. You know, I'm a big Star Trek fan, as you all picked up on listening to me. So I just thought that was crazy. But this guy, he's been in he's been in lots of movies, things like that. He was actually in Final Destination, which was interesting, because just a few episodes ago, we didn't count it, but Hereafter was kind of like Final Destination, kind of not. But the main one here is he completes the Drake family from X-Men 2. He played Ronnie Drake, Bobby Drake's little brother, who calls, you know, the cops on the X-Men.
Oh, no, I hate that kid. Yeah.
So we have their entire family, all four members of their family, the mom, the dad, the brother, and of course Iceman himself, were all on Smallville. The dad was strangled by the serial killer in Hourglass. The mom is Maggie Sawyer, who's a recurring guest star in a few episodes. Of course, Iceman, Sean Ashmore, was in Leech and Asylum, and then his twin brother is on the show later on. Or was he Jimmy Olsen? Well, he ended up playing Jimmy Olsen after all. Oh, such a rad old.
That was a stupid twist.
That was ridiculous. We'll get to it in 5 years. Ronnie Drake. Yeah, Ronnie Drake. Here he is, Garrett. So we have the whole Drake family from the Brian Singer X-Men movie. So just one of those quirks of everybody filming in Canada, I guess. So good for you, Drake family. And then we have, talking about repeats, the guest stars and whatnot, we have Tamho Pinnicott, who I've never learned how to say his name correctly, but he played Hilo on Battlestar Galactica. And do you ever watch BSG, the new BSG on Sci-Fi Channel, Billy?
I've actually not watched Battlestar Galactica. I've heard good stuff, and I've heard the rebooted series is really good.
Yes, yeah, so he's from the reboot Sci-Fi Channel. I highly recommend it. It's one of the best sci-fi series. And he plays Hilo. And Hilo is actually one of my favorite characters on BSG, because I'm such a nerd calling it BSG, right? But all those characters are so, I mean, it's not like Star Trek's a little cleaner universe, right? The BSG is like, you know, this is like the real world, man, the future. Kind of like Babylon 5. It's a really good sci-fi show I recommend to people. But they're like more like if we were in space now, like characters were flawed and all this. So no one is like traditional. Everyone has shades of gray and all this. No one's like a traditional good guy. But the Hilo, Tamho Pinnicott character on the show, was one of the real, like, just straight arrow hero kind of classic guys. And he was one of my favorite characters for that reason. Anyway, this is his first appearance on Smallville as Garrett's brother, older brother Vince. He shows up at the season 6 penultimate episode, Prototype, as Lois Lane's ex, I think ex-boyfriend or at least ex-friend, who has also been, you know, in a Luther experiment that has turned him into something else. So he's kind of carved that niche out for himself in sci-fi. So interesting when they use these guest stars, only 3 years apart. And I guess, you know, very different role, but still, I mean, people used to get away with that, like in the 60s and 70s a lot, like having people come back and play different characters. But in the 2000s, it's like, look, guys, people are going to notice, you know?
Yeah, it's a very weird thing that they did, but you know, I mean, it. Although with the DC movies, one of the guys from Guardians, the one that was like after Star-Lord, he's going to be in Aquaman and Shazam as both different characters. He just got cast as the Wizard and everything, so I guess it's not that much.
I am not even going to attempt to say his name.
I'm not either.
I'm just trying to mention Gladiator. Yes, exactly.
Blood Diamond.
Blood Diamond. But he's the guy that survives in Gladiator. He's the guy that buries Russell
Crowe. Yeah, who's awesome in that.
Yeah, he is awesome in that. So, hey, Russell Crowe, Jor-El, it's all connected. And anyway.
Yeah, and Connie Nielsen, who was Queen Hippolyta. And Joaquin Phoenix.
because he's the Joker now. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What's that little kid doing? Is he going to show up at some point as Robin or something?
Oh, God. I hope so.
Oh, yeah. Connie Nielsen, she was originally cast as Lara, I believe.
But she had to drop out.
And so, yeah. So then we got the Kingpin's girlfriend from Daredevil, Lara.
Yeah, and then, then Nicole Kidman was supposed to be Queen Hippolyta, but now she's Aquaman's mom.
Yeah, and we got Daredevil playing Batman. So what are you going to do, right? We talked about that. Tamal Pickett, he appears in Man of Steel. He is one of the government guys who greets Lois when she lands in the Arctic or the Antarctic. I forget which side of the world it's on. But, yeah, he's one of the guys that helped her off the helicopter. And Amy Adams, another Smallville guest star. So it's all connected, guys. We'll make a web sometime.
Emil Hamilton from Smallville was one of the soldiers. He's like the one in Man of Steel that's like, hey, guys, look at this.
He's Dr. Hamilton from the movie's like assistant or something. Yeah, so
it's really weird.
Grant Gustin, Julian Luther from season 7.
Oh yeah. He was
Grant Gabriel. Grant Gustin plays the Flash. CW, but Grant Gabriel plays the fake Jimmy Olsen who gets his head blown off in Batman v Superman. So yeah, it's fun to connect these dots. So
it's just a whole rabbit hole we can get down.
So, yeah.
We're digressing.
This episode is pretty by the numbers, so I thought we'd just get all that fun stuff out of the way off the top. So let's go ahead and dive into it. Resurrection.
I thought you and your mom could use some moral support and a little sustenance.
Thanks, Lana. My mom hasn't eaten all day. I'm sure she'll appreciate it. I'll be back soon.
Is everything all right?
Do you know Garrett Davis?
Sure, he and Vince used to come by the Talon.
Yeah, well, Vince came down with this rare liver disease, and he needed a transplant.
I'm guessing from the past tense that he never got it.
No, he died yesterday. Then last night, he showed up at my barn.
He came back to life?
But he seemed completely fine until he started bleeding from his eyes.
I've seen it before. With Adam, I found this obituary that said he died 5 months ago of a rare liver disease.
Did you tell anyone? Why not?
Adam said if I told anyone, they could be in danger.
Where is Adam now?
I don't know. He disappeared. I haven't seen him in more than a week.
Listen, Vince mentioned he got an injection. Did Adam ever take anything?
Yeah, at first I thought it was because he was a drug addict, but maybe that's what was keeping him alive.
Resurrection. It's the 15th episode of Smallville's third season. It aired on February 25th, 2004. Written by Todd Slavkin and Darren Swimmer and directed by Terrence O'Hara. First of all, I was disappointed this episode wasn't directed by Rick Rosenthal, who directed a few episodes of Smallville. He directed Halloween 2 and Halloween Resurrection. But no, he didn't direct Smallville Resurrection, unfortunately. It was Terrence O'Hara. Anyway, the episode starts out, and we're picking up where we left Jonathan had a heart attack. And he's back. He's getting his heart checked out. And they are talking to Dr. Scanlan or Dr. McIntyre. I'm going to bring this up now because the Smallville Official Companion makes a note, right? And it says, you know, they have a little fun facts on the side. And it says, Julian Christopher made his final appearance to date as Dr. McIntyre, having previously been seen at the Smallville Medical Center as far back as season one's Leech. And I'm like, oh, I remember this guy. He's the African-American doctor with the beard. He's got a cool, deep voice. He's memorable. He shows up in a lot of episodes. I believe he sells an episode where I like this where there's continuity in the doctors, you know? Like, a lot of these doctors, they show, you know, when Lionel went blind or this and that, right? So I remember this guy, right? And not only does a small little companion call him Dr. McIntyre, IMDb calls him Dr. McIntyre, right? So I read this, and then I immediately watch the episode. It's usually how I operate. In the first scene, Martha's like, Dr. Scanlon, what do you recommend? I'm like, whoa, 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 Dr. Scanlon? Where do they get this? I turned on the subtitles, right? And that confuses me, so I go double check. I go double check the IMDb. Dr. Scanlon is the other guy, the older Caucasian doctor, right? Who Garrett talks to a lot, right? That's his name on IMDb. But in the episode, Garrett calls him Dr. Yeager. And in IMDb, his name is Dr. Yeager Scanlon. So I don't know what got confused where. People calling doctors the wrong name. But right off the top, I just had to play a game. What are these doctors' names? So anyway, there you go. I don't know. So
yeah, it was weird. I'm like the Caucasian doctor, a weird thing for me was I thought he looked like Kevin Conroy a little bit. Like, if you see what pictures of Kevin Conroy looks like.
That's a good call. He kind of has those, like, kind of high cheekbone, kind of skeletal almost face. Absolutely.
Yeah, similar hair and everything. And I'm like, I'm just going to call you Dr. Batman. So, and then the other guy I remember from way back in early Smallville.
Yeah. And according to the companion, these usually come out like a year or so after the season, obviously. He hadn't appeared in any. So I'm going to, you know what? Why don't I do it right now? We have the technology, right? Let me go on to IMDb, even though they got all the names wrong. Julian Christopher. Let's see how many episodes of Smallville he was in. Scrolling down. This is live, guys. This is live radio. It's no editing here. So, all right. He was in 6 episodes total. Oh, he does come back in season 6. Excellent. Okay, oh, so cool. In between the companions here, he came back. So he was in just – let's run it down, right, since we're talking about these doctors, man. He was in Leech and Nicodemus in season 1. He was in Vortex and Precipice in season 2. He was in Resurrection in season 3. And he comes back in Fallout in season 6, which is the one with Little Bow Wow. So I have no memory of him being in that episode, but I'll keep an eye out for him. I'm glad he came back. And, you know, in this scene, right – he's talking to Jonathan and Martha. He's recommending a triple bypass, right? And he's like, Jonathan, you and I have known each other a long time. And usually that kind of stuff annoys me in these episodes. But this guy has been around for several seasons, the whole show. So I like that they kept bringing back these just bit roles, these day player actors, to add some kind of realism to the world.
Yeah, except they didn't call him by the right name. I guess continuity wasn't, like, top priority. Like, it was sort of. Because, you know,
this used to happen on, like, the original Star Trek series all the time. Like, there's one episode, it's like a famous episode, it's called Balance of Terror, right? It starts out with a wedding, and the Enterprise was the Romulans, right? And the groom dies. And it's really sad. And at the end of the episode, Kirk's talking to the almost widow. I guess she's not a widow because they weren't married.
I remember this episode.
Okay. So that happens, right? And like, oh, wow. The next episode, I kid you not, it's called Shore Leave, right? The same actress, I don't know if they changed the name of the character or what, right? Same actress is like hanging out with some other guy on the planet. Like, and they're like, I'm like, whoa, is this a rebound guy? What is this? But, you know, that's what I'm talking about.
Recasting, yeah, I totally remember that.
This is funny. This kind of ties together the stuff we were talking about before the break into the episode. They're like recasting or just casting actors again as different characters and throughout a show. It's just, it can get very confusing, especially when they can't get people's names right. And since we're on the topic, let me look up the other doctor, Dr. Yeager, or Dr. Whatever.
We would talk about the episode, but it's very by the numbers.
It's more fun to go down these side trails with this stuff.
Rabbit holes.
I'm glad we're on the same page.
I apologize.
We're gonna have over 200 episodes of this podcast, so you guys are cool, you know. So Dr. Yeager Scanlon, as he's called, let's see, he was in Vortex in season 2, Resurrection in season 3, Scare in season 4, and Lexmas in season 5. So Jerry Wasserman is his name. So he was only in 4 episodes, but he was also in The Butterfly Effect 2, Sorry, Erica Durant. And he was also in Watchmen as a detective. Oh, and he was in Battlestar Galactica. He was in one episode.
Everybody was in Watchmen.
Yeah. And again, everything films in Canada. Most of these people watch. So anyway, let's talk about the episode for a bit. Again, then we'll find another side trail to go on.
Yeah.
Clark is listening to this conversation with the superhero. So he hears the whole thing about the triple bypass, and you know, Jonathan's like, I don't know, that's equally risky. But the doctor says, look, if you don't do this, your next heart attack could be fatal. So there you go. That's how it is. And Clark is waiting out in the lobby there, and he hears this guy at a vending machine. He can't get his Coke, right, or whatever. So Clark goes up to it, and it's funny how he kind of bumps it.
Solid boom.
Into the can, comes right out. But I'm going to call Garrett, right? He's what I determined we're going to call a Trevor on this show. That's a new phrase I've coined on this show. We're talking about a character who just comes out of nowhere, right? We're like, oh, yeah, it's Trevor. You know, just some random character that, like, they know, the characters know, but you've never seen him before. I'm like, oh, yeah, Trevor's been here for months, for years. Yeah, well, we remember Trevor. You know, that's the name I pick. It's some generic random name, some random guy who's like, oh, yeah, Trevor – I don't know. He's been here since freshman year. It's like, no, Trevor just made up this episode. So he's a Trevor. So that's a phrase that I'm coining for Always on
the Spot. So the Trevor is the new red shirt?
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, if they die, especially, right? But anyway, Garrett, played by James Kirk, again, awesome name.
His middle name better be Tiberius.
Yeah, exactly, right? His brother is in the hospital, and he's bad liver, right? And so they're kind of, you know, bonding over this, or, you know, consoling each other over this. Of course, Clark drops, I used to think my dad was a man of steel, right? There you go. There's a on-the-nose Superman reference, if I've ever heard one. But, they're having a nice, you know, bonding moment here. But then we hear we have a cold blue in his brother's room, Vince. But I'm going to call him Hilo, probably, for most of the episode. We'll see which name sticks. This episode is clearly not concerned with proper names, so why should I be? So... Hilo dies, and then we see like a screen, like ready for delivery. So you see something shady is going to go on here, you know, with his body. And then it's like time of death, blah 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 blah. And then we cut to the credits. So there you go, immediate death. But also we got to do our tally where we have +2 for hospital visits because Vince and Pa Kent are in the hospital, and they both come back later. But we're only one per customer per episode, so we're only counting 2, which is still a lot for one episode. So we come back, and, is the helicopter thing later? Yeah, the helicopter thing is later. They kind of delay that, which maybe they should have done that off the top. But we come back, and it's in the waiting room, and Clark's talking to Martha. It's like, I heard all about the surgery, and she's like, well, is he going to do it? I don't know, but... Meanwhile, they're looking at Garrett, and he's pretty sad. And Garrett apparently has no family. Literally, I think Martha asks, like, where's his family? And Clark's like, well, he has no family. He's an uncle who lives in Germany. It's like, again, some guy lives in small with, like, no parents, right?
Yeah, of course. It's another he's all I have left. He's my older brother sort of thing. And I guess, then again, he has a problem with his liver. That's the thing in the episode. They talk a lot about livers in this episode.
he needed a transplant. He didn't get it. So he passed away. And he has nowhere to go. So what do the Kents do? Right? They bring people in. So they're going to let Garrett stay with them, you know, for the time being. Which the Kents, they always do this, right? They always bring in some, you know.
They should have just opened up a hotel instead of a farm.
Yeah.
they would have made a lot more money that way. They're, like, generally nice people. They're very appealing, homely. I just think that would have been more logical. But, you know, Superman lore, they got to have the farm.
Yeah, I do find it amusing whenever someone stays with the Kents, they always get them ready on that couch. You know,
they just have a futon ready.
Yeah, like, does she have, like, a guest room or something? Like, literally, you can stay with us as long as you want, but you have to sleep on this couch. So, anyway.
Yeah, it's just the living room couch.
Yeah, so I like the next scene, though, because Clark goes back to the hospital. Jonathan's going to read up on stuff, and he says, I know all about the surgery, and Jonathan says, I thought you and I talked about eavesdropping on people's private conversations, which I thought was pretty funny. That's a very Jonathan thing to say. But they have a good bonding moment here, and Clark pretty much convinces them to do the surgery, and they, you know, they have a good long hug, and Jonathan tells them to go tell Martha to get all the paperwork ready because Clark is gonna, or Jonathan is gonna have the surgery. So, but we also get a couple of I guess what would you call them, a foreshadowing of what Garrett's gonna do, because we find out that his brother worked in demolitions and worked with explosions all the time. So they dropped that in a couple of times, and Garrett's talking about his brother. So I guess that kind of explains how he was able to fashion this bomb. Yeah. This is pre-YouTube, right? You can't just, like, go Google something like that. Or I mean, I don't know.
You had to know something, or you had to go to a library and look up how to do it. Like, there was no – I mean, there was sort of an internet, but it was still, like, it was early internet. Like, you know, AOL.
Pay by the minute. You know, that's why Clark and Chloe always have to go to the town, right?
Yeah.
So, Martha, well, we're back at, you know, the I think we got some of the actual moments on over, but we got the gist of what's happening, right? we're at the Kin house now, and we're Clark and Garrett are just talking, and Garrett's like, oh, you know, he used to call me Run. I used to hate it, but now I'd give anything to hear him say it again. You know, stuff like that. And Martha comes in and she's like, oh, I just got a call from the crematorium. They want to know what to do with your brother's ashes. And Garrett's like, whoa, 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 what are you talking about? He's supposed to be buried next to my mom and dad, because they established that their parents had died in a car accident, and Vincent had raised Garrett up to this point. So that causes suspicions. But then this is when we get the whole, like, the body's loaded onto a helicopter and it's flown to some, you know, shady warehouse. And then we see Dr. King, who was working for Lionel and Lex earlier this season. She's the one that she's running these experiments for Lionel, and they unzip the body bag, and it's Vince, CeeLo, and they give him a big injection in his chest. He wakes back up, and they're like, welcome back to life, or some stupid line like that, and he's back. And what do you think of this?
I was just like, then why didn't they just call this episode Lazarus? I mean, literally, they resurrect him from the dead. And he is like a bigger, he's like somebody's brother that meant something to them. And I mean, I guess you could do the biblical connection, because one of the sisters in the Lazarus story is named Martha. So, but no, that was a big needle. And I was like, that was a huge needle. And,
well, he was dead, so it didn't hurt. Yeah.
But I'm like, yeah, when you wake up, I would be freaked out more than anything. And he seemed like he was just like, and then yeah, he's just sort of standing, or he's just sort of quietly taking it in, sort of like I can't really tell if he was like shocked or something, but hear death temporarily.
I do question, like, so what do you think happened after this scene? Because the next time we see him, he shows up at the Canton Farm, and we'll get there in a second, but he wakes up on the stage and he's like, welcome back. And what, do you think he just, like, ran away or what?
Yeah, I love how they just – they know where the Kent Farm is. I mean,
yes, how did he even know? So
I mean, I guess in a town like Smallville, it's really not hard to find, but it's also –
how would he know where his brother was? He didn't ask anybody, right?
Yeah, he didn't know where his brother was. What compelled him to go to the Kent Farm?
Yeah, when
back to the hospital.
The way I see it in my head playing out is like, he wakes up, they're like, welcome back, and he immediately just starts running away. And I guess he runs all, maybe he hitchhikes, I don't know, but he gets all the way back to Smallville from Metropolis, which is, at this point in the series, is supposed to be like 3 hours away, but, you know, we know better, right? anyway, there's no connecting scene here. We don't see, like, if they had just one little, like, scene of him, like, jumping on the back of a truck or anything. But there's not. Like, he wakes up here. The next time we see him is he's, you know, at the Kent Farm. But anyway, that happens, and Clark and Garrett go confront the doctor. One of the – not the doctors we were talking about. We have another doctor. I don't even know her name, but just another random doctor they're talking to. And she's like, hey, this is the paperwork. I'm sorry. Maybe you didn't know your brother as well as you thought. He's like, my brother told me everything. He really starts to get –
he starts freaking out a little too early, and I'm like, okay, pull it back a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But he apologizes to Clark after this, because Clark kind of like talks him down and smooths over the situation. Obviously, I can only assume that Lionel or LuthorCorp, whoever, had flagged anyone with a liver disease. And when they die, they kind of take them over and they insert all this forged paperwork, right? I mean, that's the only thing I can assume here.
Yeah.
But Garrett does say, he says, I guess I have a short fuse. I'm like, oh, I get it, because he's going to have a bomb later. So, but, anyways. Smallville and their subtle.
Very subtle.
Then we get the Lex is on the phone trying to find Dr. Ting. Because she is falling off the map as far as Lex is concerned, anyway. She's still working for Lionel, so she's deep in with both losers and in big trouble. But Chloe comes to give Lex the information because they're working together on this Adam Knight case, I guess. But yeah. Chloe tells Lex that basically she was a green card bride, a LuthorCorp security guy married her to get her into the States. So Lionel had recruited her that way. But Lex says, let me take it from here. You know, I like this Lex, like, he's still, like, friends with people, like, Chloe and stuff, but I mean, he know that he's going to go off and do what he needs to do, and he's kind of got her out of it, which is probably for the best.
Yeah, I like the line where he's like, it's not about your capability, it's just for your safety. And I'm like, yeah, you know what, I'm going to give it to Lex on this one, because he's probably right.
He's probably right. He probably has ulterior motives, but he's also probably right. That's the thing about Lex at this point in the series, anyway. He does mean it on some degree. So, but yeah, then we get Clark and Garrett, and they're back at the barn. And this is, you know, he's still sad about all this. They're angry about what the hospital lost his brother's body and all this. And but this is when Vince just shows up at the barn, like, oh, this must be where my brother is, and it makes no sense. This is a major plot hole in this episode. Like, this episode is, you know, it's by the numbers, but it's pretty solid so far. But this just makes no sense. I don't know how he got there. I mean, he knew he had to be there, but here he is, right?
Yeah, and we wouldn't harp on it so much if it wasn't just, like, a big elephant in the room. It's not like a small continuity error, you know, that you could just, like, brush aside. Like, maybe with the doctors, you can brush that aside, maybe. But, like, This is something in the episode that does not make sense.
And is that? I mean,
bothers you.
Clark is bothered. Like, well, how did you come back to life? There must be some explanation. Like, it's like,
how are you alive? And how did you get here?
Yeah, forget coming here from the dead. How did you find us here? And how did you get here? It makes no sense. So,
I would be asking questions.
Yeah, forget the resurrection part. But then he starts bleeding from the eyes, and his skin color starts turning yellow, and this looks exactly like our friend Adam Knight. And then you realize it's all connected, huh?
Yeah. He's got very short liver failure. I mean, that acted fast. What was that?
Yeah, like a day?
Like a day?
Not less even than a day? Like, how many injections does Adam have in a day? But we have we take him back to the hospital. You know, because, I mean, where else is there to go? Like, Garrett even questions Clark, like, I don't know, we should have brought him back here, Clark. Like, well, where else are we going to take him, right? But meanwhile, Jonathan is preparing for surgery. He has a nice, you know, moment with Clark and Martha. Clark wants to stay with them. They say, no, if there's a way you can go save your friend, you know, go do it. And so, I mean, because Clark wants to be there for support, but they tell him, hey, look, you can't do anything here. Go be where you can be of use. And I like that, a little moment between the kids, huh?
Yeah, I like a couple of things. First, I like that Clark is using a super hearing. Second of all, I'm glad that they're establishing that. I mean, I know, like, early on in the series, I'm glad that they're establishing that Jonathan Kent has heart problems, because otherwise, you know, in the Superman myth, that wouldn't make any sense if you don't know what happens to Pa Kent. And
yeah, because he's a lot younger in Smallville. So, like, yeah. You know, in the comics and in Superman the movie, right, he's an older guy. And you're like, oh, okay, well, you know.
Yeah, you're like, okay, I guess that works, but I'm glad that here you have, like, a history of it, so it would make sense. And I also like that Jonathan understands, like, you know, Clark's just trying to be a good son, like he always is. And he's like, I want to support you and everything. And that really does mean a lot to people, especially when they go into surgery and stuff. But he's like, he knows that Clark, he's got to save people. He's got to help him. And so he's like, yeah, all right. And then he runs into Lana.
Yeah, just, he runs, like,
Here, Clark, I got all these apples and stuff for you guys. I'm like, that's pretty cool, Lana.
She is dressed like so pink, though. It's like, can one article of your clothing not be pink? She's got a pink jacket or like a pink sweater and a pink scarf. So, but it is nice. She's very thoughtful. His dad's about to have surgery. She wants to come, like, give him all, you know, some fruit or some snacks and just show her support. So that was good from her to see that. And then we have this exposition dump from her about, hey, Clark, here's what my subplot has been in the last 5 episodes, right?
Yeah. And I'm still distracted by her Mean Girls outfit, as I'm going to call it. It's just very pink.
Yeah.
Very distracting.
But it looks out of place. Because she's wearing, you know, she's really so happy and wearing all this stuff. And then you start talking about, oh, yeah, Adam, he took all these injections and he was bleeding from the eye. I've heard that because Clark explains, like, hey, have you heard about Garrett? Well, his brother Vince died, but he's back now. And he started bleeding from the eye and he changed color. And Lana's like, I've seen that before. And
it was Adam. She's like, well, let me tell you what I know about that. And then it's like, yeah, Adam and everything. And Clark's just like, do you know where this is at? And then she's like, sure.
It's he's like, well, why didn't you tell anyone about this? And did you tell anyone about it? She's like, no, he said that if I told anyone, you know, they'd be in danger. And Clark's like, okay, well, I just thought it was interesting. Like, again, it was a little contrived, but they had to, since Clark and Lana had not been talking about this for episodes now, we had to get Clark up to speed, and that was the purpose of this scene. But then we go back in the hospital, and Garrett talks to Dr. Jaeger, or whatever you want to call him, and that doctor tells him that, hey, this might be it. You know, we don't know what's wrong with your brother, but we still can't save him. You know, and you might need to say goodbye. So he's like, that's not an option, Matt. I mean, he has a nice little moment with Vince, I will say, because he's like, if it wasn't for me, you'd have such a better life. And he's like, I wouldn't change a thing. You know, so that's nice. Nice moment between the two brothers.
I like that he's not like, you know, trying to cling on to life. He's just accepts it. He's like, you know what? I'm gonna die. I had a good life. I loved it. I love my brother and everything. I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool. Because usually, shows, they would just be like, he would be the desperate one.
Yeah.
And it would be the younger brother who is the one that's trying to be rational and calm and accepts death. But no, not in Smallville. I mean,
I did like that, though. Obviously, he was his older brother. He'd been kind of his parent for years.
Yeah, so
it makes sense. Like a calming presence, right?
Yeah, it would make sense for him to be like, hey, no, just you got to accept this. But in real life, some people just cannot accept death. And it's a sad thing, but that's why he's freaking out. So, like, he's also freaking out because, it's the last of his family, and they established that through heavy exposition. But, you know, it makes sense. And he says that he has a short fuse. So, yeah. I liked that whole scene. It was a very nice scene.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it is their last moment together, because at that point he kind of like passes out and he never comes to again, unfortunately. But, you know, we also get a scene with Martha and Jonathan after this, just the two of them, right? And this is the kind of scene that, you know, it kind of sets Smallville apart, right? Because the parents get scenes to themselves, you know, because they have like, hey, Martha, you know, if I don't make it, you know, this could go either way in there, and you gotta hold of what we talked about. It's time for Clark to leave. Gotta let him go. And she's like, oh, when that day comes, you'll be right there beside me. It's like, sad, because that's not gonna be the case.
Oh, the anvil of irony.
Yeah.
Ow.
But that is a great scene between the two of them as well.
Yeah, I like that Jonathan's just like, hey, just in case. I'm not saying this is gonna happen, but just in case, I want you to know this. And she's like, oh, don't say that and everything. It's very much like a real married couple. What they would do, because my dad has had triple bypass surgery before, and he talked to my mom like this, and yeah, everything was fine, everything's great. But it's very realistic, and it's very nice, because you like the Kents.
It helps ground the show. All this crazy stuff is happening, and then we have like people having a real conversation, like you would have before you get into surgery, for all the times we joke about how many times they go to the hospital, at least this episode takes going to the hospital and having surgery pretty seriously.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there are people that have triple bypass surgeries on their hearts. Uh-huh. And it is a tricky procedure. Let's just say that. You got to be very skilled in order to do it properly. So, like, well, the doctor's got to be very skilled, and, you know, it's not cheap. Let's just say that. So this is probably going to hurt the Kents financially, which they've already got.
That's why they got to keep paying on that farm. They've been their family generations, right? But
anyway, the farm money can only do so much.
So Clark goes to continue his research, and he's at the torch with Chloe. And we have a plus one for Chloe's unseen connections because Chloe has a contact at Metropolis General, which lets them know that there were the only organ donors, because at Smallville, that random third doctor, the lady doctor, had said, oh, well, he's an organ donor, and he was set to be cremated, and that's why he went to Metropolis General, and blah, blah, blah. But Chloe says that her contact says the only organ donors were only two of them yesterday, and they were both females, so it's not a male. So that couldn't have been Vince. So Clark's like, oh, all right, what we got to do is we got to find the guy who took him there. So we go find the helicopter pilot. And I got to say, let's go down another rabbit hole, another sidetrack. When I saw who this guy was, I was like, holy hell, it's one of the lone gunmen from the X-Files. I had no idea this guy was in Smallville.
Yeah, it was.
Bruce Harwood, who plays Byers, who was in the X-Files the whole run of the show, as one of the most beloved supporting characters, the Lone Gunman. He had his own spin-off show, The Lone Gunman, three of them. That's the irony of it.
Yeah, it didn't last very long, but
no,
it was a spin-off.
But it did predict 9/11, apparently. I never saw it, but in the first episode, there's a plot about a...
There was a lot of things. The Simpsons predicted 9/11 as well.
The Simpsons predict everything.
Like, you might as well just have
an X-Files. Disney, Fox.
Yeah, Simpsons... I don't know what kind of deal they made with, like, the devil or something, but they predicted a lot of stuff.
Well, when you go over 30 years as a show, I guess you're bound to be right every now and then. But
yeah, but, I mean, it was all for parody's sake. All is a joke, but little did we know that those jokes became reality. It's freaky.
It is. But yeah, it blew me away to see this guy, because I'm like, whoa, why did I not know one of the whole gun was on Smallville? I mean, he's in two scenes, has just a small handful of lines, which is interesting because he's such a huge supporting player on the X-Files. I thought if they got this guy, he would have more to do. But hey, this is the Smallville tradition of wasting great supporting characters from the X-Files, because, you know, we had the cigarette smoking man who was the mayor of Smallville.
Oh, yeah.
Episodes, and he did pretty much nothing. Like, he did, other than unintentionally murder Lana's great aunt back in the 60s, he really had no, you know, bearing on the plot. I feel like they could have done more with him. But anyway, Clark threatens Byers here. I'm going to call him Byers. Like, hey, I'm going to guess you can get a lot of trouble for taking bodies where they shouldn't go. So take him where you took the body yesterday. So Byers flies him over to Metropolis, and he asks him, what's this place all about? And Byers says, they pay me cash. I don't ask questions. So he drops him off, and he flies off, presumably just continue doing what he's doing. and Clark lands on the roof, and he uses his super hearing. And perfect timing, right? Lex has arrived to confront Dr. Ting, and Clark's super hearing hears this very interesting conversation between them. What did you think of this confrontation here?
I like this. It's like, oh, what is Lex doing here? It adds a little bit of, I guess, a little bit of tension between Clark and Lex, which is always nice.
Well, I thought that Clark would, like, misunderstand what happened and, like, blame Lex, but I was glad that, like, he didn't. Because clearly he listened long enough to hear that Lex was just investigating as well. He wasn't behind any of this.
Yeah, so I'm glad
they go that route.
I'm very glad that it wasn't that misunderstanding. I always hate those in movies and TV, because it just does nothing but just – it's padding, essentially.
Lex has some great zingers to the doctor here. She's like, how did you get in here? Lex's like, well, as I'm sure you're aware, that building is owned by Luther Corp. So that's how you got in.
He's so nonchalant about it. He's just like – yeah, Luther Corp. The name will open up some doors.
But my favorite line of the episode is the doctor's like, if you don't leave immediately, I'm going to tell your father. Lex says, can't you just send me to the principal instead?
That was my favorite line as well.
That's the best line of the episode.
I was like, this is a Pete line. Come
on. Oh, but so they're having this conversation about like this vial and resurrection and blah 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 blah, and then Clark decides to swoop in and steal this vial of the serum that presumably is what resurrected people and is what is keeping them alive. And they're like, what happened? Where did that go? And obviously, they're never going to get an answer. But I'm sure Dr. King's like, what the hell happened here? Did Lex just steal this, like, but like sleight of hand or what? So. But yeah. We go back to the hospital, and it's time for Pa's surgery. And Pete shows up to wait with Lana and Martha. Lana and Martha have, like, half a scene of dialogue here together. I don't know if that's enough to pass the Bechdel test. What do you think, Billy?
I don't know if it passes the Bechdel test either.
Because it's so brief, right?
It's very brief. But I'm gonna leave that up to you.
Oh, all right, we'll decide at the end.
Sorry, it's just I'm trying to remember if they pass.
They're talking about Jonathan here, and then Pete shows up, and their conversation's over, and then there's no other two women that have a conversation the whole episode. So we'll save the end. We'll save it to the topic. We'll save it to the end. But Pete shows up. He's got to get his requisite scene or two in, and then Derek shows up, and he goes full John Q. This is the true plus one episode. Movie plus an episode. He's holding the hospital hostage.
It starts to get good because he's just, hey, I need my brother to be good now. And they're just like, hey, calm down. And then I got a bomb.
Yeah, he like has a bomb and like a trench coat or whatever he's got, some kind of jacket, I don't know. And it's a kryptonite bomb because of course it is, because it's Smallville, right?
Yeah, the kryptonite's just as easy as finding, I don't know, anything else. It is a very common thing there.
Well, Pete goes on to tell Martha when they're, you know, being all held hostage, he says, you know, Clark can't help us in here. That's a kryptonite bomb. Their family uses it in their, quote, demolition business. More bang for their buck. And I'm like, really? Is that how kryptonite makes it blow up faster now? Like, is that what we're doing?
Does kryptonite just mean a bigger explosion? Because actually, I can kind of understand that.
Well, as established,
it makes a lot of weird stuff.
It makes cars go faster. So I guess by that same logic, it would make explosions.
Then again, it does make a lot of powers. I mean,
well, I always see,
people
like,
of Earth, it makes a lot of superpowered people. Hence our Freak of the Weeks.
But there needs to be another catalyst, you know? Like
that's true, yeah. It's usually it reacts to something around, like, the environment or something.
And, like, if you blow something up next to some kryptonite, it's going to blow up bigger? Sure, whatever. Anyway, but of course, if he just had a bomb, Clark could take care of it, no problem. That's what Clark was thinking, right? He was like, oh, okay, I'm going to run in there and save the day. I do like it when, you know, Clark shows up, and the hospital, he's like, what happened here? Like, I can only think of that gif from Community, you know, the episode where the multiple timelines and Troy goes to get pizza and he comes back and the whole place is on fire. that gif gets a lot of play these days, but that's a great episode of Community, by the way. But anyway, I can only imagine that's how Clark feels. He left the hospital earlier that day. He comes back, it's been barricaded. There's a SWAT team, the whole sheriff's department's out there.
Sheriff's there as well.
Yeah, Sheriff Adams is there, and he convinces Sheriff Adams. He's like, look, I know this kid. My mom and my dad are in there. My dad's having surgery. I have a medicine. So they go through this whole back and forth here. And, you know, he's like, just let me get on the phone with him. And Clark does a real good hostage negotiation, I think, you know, because the sheriff doesn't want him to go in. Clark tells Garrett, like, hey, look, I have the medicine here. Let me in. But you got to let the hostages go. You know, Clark did a real good job hostage negotiating. But at the same time, Sheriff Adams – you know, car goes in, the hostages come out, right? But Sheriff Adams pulls over, like, one of her deputies, like, hey, this is too dangerous. If you have a shot, you take it, you know. And Camille Mitchell, who Smallville, the official companion in season 3, available wherever books are sold, refers to her as Camille Matthews. So the name confusion in the episode has extended into the companion now, because we're getting actors' names wrong. It's Camille Mitchell, not Camille Matthews. But, yeah.
I call her Sheriff Marge Gunderson, you know, because she reminds me of Frances McDormand from Fargo.
Oh, yeah. That's total inspiration for her, right?
It's totally, like, that was done on purpose. No.
Yeah,
no,
it must be. Must be, yeah. But she says about this character turning the script, she says, quote, I was surprised when I read the script. I wasn't expecting it. I don't know why I was surprised, because she's obviously so incapable of doing whatever it takes to protect the community. but I was surprised that the character would finally go ahead and give the order to have someone killed. She doesn't have a choice in that necessarily, but I found it interesting when they chose to reveal that tough side to her. I think that in terms of who and what she is, that was the most revealing and truthful moment. So yeah, she's become more than the cartoon caricature of Sheriff that Perry White described her as earlier this season. I really, you know, have grown to like her rewatching the show. So
yeah, I like her too. She's like, she is actually doing her job. She's actually suspicious of Clark. She even says in the episode, she's like, "Where'd you get this vial?" You know, that's a very sensible question to ask. And then he's just like, "It doesn't matter. What matters is I get in there." I would still be like, "Yeah, no, answer the question." And you know she would totally do that. But right, there was a hostage situation, so I guess she let it slide that time.
So the hostages come out, and Martha stops Clark. And like, Clark, he's got a kryptonite bomb. Because Clark's like, "It's fine, Mom. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to do this. I'm going to get the bomb. Don't worry about it." And that's a kryptonite bomb. He's like, "Oh, great." There actually is a short 30-second deleted scene right before this where Garrett's like, "All right, all the hostages out of here." That's on the DVDs. And they're all leaving, and Martha's like, "You guys stay. You guys go. I'm going to stay. I'm not leaving here without my husband." And Garrett's like, "That's the deal. You got to go, you know?" So I like that little moment. I understand why they cut it. Obviously, they had to cut it for time. It's only like 30 seconds. But it's a nice moment to show that Martha didn't just, you know, abandon Jonathan in there. Because Jonathan, by the way, we keep cutting to Jonathan. He's in the middle of his heart surgery during all of this, right?
Yeah, everything is just, it's just smooth sailing in the operating room of Jonathan Kent.
So this is where things take kind of a tragic turn here. Clark has his medicine, right? And he puts it down on the floor, and then he slowly walks away because obviously Garrett's in kryptonite. And I love how Clark spins this. Garrett's like, "What are you doing?" And Clark's like, "You have a bomb strapped to your chest. I'm just trying to keep my distance." So that's a nice explanation why he doesn't want to get too close to him.
It's not the worst excuse that Clark has had. There's definitely been worse.
Garrett reaches down, he picks up this serum, right? But when he holds it up, he's close to the kryptonite. So then we see the whole bubbling blood, the kind of things that happens to Clark's blood when he gets exposed to kryptonite. And then it goes back to being clear, and you're thinking, "Oh man, I think he just spoiled the serum, huh?"
Yeah, but then when he moves it away, it turns, you know, it's normal again.
Yeah, but I think it kind of damage was done at that point, I guess. He gives it to the doctor, Dr. Yeager. Dr. Yeager Scanlon. And he tells him, like, "Inject into his chest." I'm like, "What is this? Where did it come from?" I'm like, "Do it." So they do it, but it doesn't work. And I think that, I mean, obviously what they're showing you visually, they don't spell it out, but like it was ruined by the kryptonite. So if he not done this craziness with the kryptonite, Clark could have brought him the serum, at least extended his life. They wouldn't have been able to keep him alive, but because they would have, you know, what's Clark going to do? Keep running back there stealing serum. But anyway, this just escalates the situation. Garrett thinks Clark lied to him now, right? And now he wants a liver. The doctor says there's none available. He's like, "You have a patient in operation right now." And Clark's like, whoa, that's my dad, right? And Garrett's like, "Yeah, this is the most selfish, entitled thing in the world." Garrett tells him, "You'll still have a mom. If he dies, I'll have no one." I'm like, "Whoa, bro, you just crossed the line here."
Yeah, I get that you're desperate, but that's just inconsiderate. Come on, dude. You can't lose your morality over, like, you can't just lose who you are because you might lose somebody. But, again, I mean, we don't know until we're put in those situations.
Yeah, like, see Star Wars Episode 3.
Sorry.
Well, in The Companion, Mark Verheyer, writer, producer for the show, said this about Garrett. "I think he was going to be a bit more sympathetic originally. It got darker as he went along, and he got shot and killed by a sniper. The villains sometimes don't matter on the show. They're secondary engines to keep the other great stuff going. But all this kid wanted to do was help his brother, and we blew his brains out." So yeah, that is one way to put it there, Verdun. Yeah,
at this point, yes. Like point. Yeah,
he's irredeemable at this point. So they all start walking down the hallway. Clark's like, "Whoa!" He tells the doctor, "You can't do this." And the doctor's like, "I know I can, but I don't know what else to do. We have, you know, 20 other patients in here who all die if I don't help this kid." So fortunately, Sheriff Adams gave that order to kill him on sight. I guess she didn't know he had a dead man switch. I mean, had she known that, would she still have shot him? I mean, I don't know, but that's, you know, something to think about. Because the sniper gets a clean shot of Garrett, shoots him. So we have a +1 for Smallville High School student death, because Garrett is dead. And now we have like the best scene in the episode.
Right? Oh, for sure. It is Clark through super speed, dealing with the bomb. He goes into another room. He gets a lead apron, which is smart because, you know, lead is the thing that I guess you do to combat kryptonite.
From the radiology lab. So that was very – that is Clark using his surroundings and being aware and being very smart. So smart points for Clark right there.
Yeah, especially considering it was like a second. And then he runs out to like this well or something. I don't know where it was. And then it just explodes in green flame. And it doesn't affect Clark because, you know, the lead apron on it. And so he's just, like, standing there just watching, you know, the rest of the bomb explode. And I guess nobody questions why the bomb didn't go off and where Clark went.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, where did he go? Like, there's a sniper looking in there and like, okay, the bomb's gone and Clark's gone. I mean, they're probably just counting their blessings, but I would want to know what happened, right?
Yeah. I mean, we know because we're the audience and we know he's Clark Kent. He can do all these things, but I mean, the town people don't know that. I mean, aside from the Kents and Pete.
Yet another miracle at the small hospital. I guess I'll chalk it up to that. But, it is. I mean, there's no even attempt at anyone trying to explain anything to this. They just kind of move on. Much like Vince just showing up at the Kent bar. There are some major plot holes in this episode.
Was the big plot hole. But this is just one of those small things where logically it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of stuff happens in Smallville all the time, so we're not going to harp on it too much. But that very impressive visuals kind of made the episode. And I noticed this in this episode. There's some great production value in this episode. There's a lot of shooting at night, you know, like the standoff outside the hospital. That's expensive to do. There's a lot of location shooting. They had a helicopter they rented, you know. They're on location in Vancouver, I assume, at the Metron Pharmaceuticals building there when Clark's on the roof. And so I'm just – there's some great production value in this episode. And then it capped off by this great save of Clark destroying the bomb at the end.
Yeah, it was definitely shot really well. The effects
were – well done, Terrence O'Hara. Good job.
Yeah. And like you said, it's very hard shooting at night. So I'll give it props for that. And, but still it was kind of just an average episode. It doesn't get good until third.
It's kind of like they wasted all this good production value on this just average kind of episode. Right?
On the last third, they put all their heart and soul into the last third of it because they knew it was just like, oh, it's just another week.
After this explosion here, it is rather amusing. Like, it kind of shakes. We cut back to the operating room Jonathan's in, and everything kind of shakes for a minute, and the doctor looks around. He's like, everybody okay? Let's continue.
Okay. No.
That's pretty funny. Idea. It's like unintentional comedy. I don't know if that was intentional or not. Just kind of
I love that, too. They're just like
– completely oblivious, right?
Okay. Yeah. I would – if I was in that situation, I'd be like, I'm going to see what that is first, and then we can go back to it. But – yeah, I like that they're just like, okay, let's continue.
All right, scalpel, thank you. Then we cut to Lex, and he's still talking to Dr. King, and she's basically telling him everything she knows. Of course, she doesn't even know where the blood came from. I mean, the fact that it's Clark's blood is still a secret. So she doesn't know where it came from, but she knows that, you know, that it's in short supply, and she tells Lex that Lionel pushed the serum too quickly, you know, it should have been developed longer. But she takes him to see Adam, as I said, Adam's body double. Because we don't want to pay Ian Somerhalder this week, and he's kind of like cowering in the corner of a cage, and he's off-colored, and he's shaking, and he has these disgusting sores all over him, which is a sign of the drug. So,
yeah, it was really gross. And they keep him in the shadows so you don't see his face or anything. Right. You just see like his discolored back, and they look these giant welts.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. But it is. Then we have a Lex and Lana scene. So what did you think of this Lex and Lana scene? Because it, to me, like, started to get a little creepy. You got to see little Lex and Lana.
Yeah, Lex vibes. Is very, like, very much like, hey, if you can talk to me, or you could talk to me about Adam, you know, just very like straightforward and like getting a little too close to Lana a little, just very, very aggressive.
Yeah, like holding her chin up and like wiping her like face. Wiping her.
She's feverishly cleaning everything, and then he's just like, "Yeah, I noticed."
Yeah. She's cleaning with a purpose because she feels like, you know, I guess kind of violated by this guy who lied to her and lived in her place. But I mean, yeah, Adam shouldn't have been done what he did. But like again, Lana, hopefully this will make you a little smarter in the future, which is like random people come live with the talent, right? So lesson learned from her. There's just an odd vibe about all this. Lex is like, you don't need anyone to talk to you about it. I'm here. And then they kind of walk off. I'm like, what are they setting up here? Whatever it is, I don't like it. Because I'm not a fan of any kind of Lex-Lana relationship on any level. And this feels like they're planting seeds for that. You know, just the way that Lex
stuff. So I even started on that stupid Lex-Lana-Clark thing.
I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah, I almost quit the show because of that. And I'm glad I didn't, but yeah.
Well, then we move on to the kids. They're leaving the hospital, and Clark is wearing his red jacket and blue shirt for the first time in a while, by the way. Like, I was very surprised.
And the red shirt.
Mm-hmm. He was wearing that most of the episode, but now we've got the pseudo Superman costume, so we got a plus one for that. And Clark tells him about the blood, and when he's been able to figure out, it's like, I think Lionel Luthor found a way to use my blood to bring people back to life. And this is an interesting question he poses here. He's like, well, if my blood can help people, maybe I should come forward and with my secret, and maybe I could save your heart, Dad. The only person I'm interested in saving is you, because Kent's like, you're going to save a lot of people, Clark, but that's not the way to do it. And I do like what Jonathan tells him. He's like, you do save my life, Clark, every day by being with us, and that's more important than anything else. And that was another great Kent scene here, huh?
Yeah, I liked it. I really liked it. It was a good father-son scene. There's a lot of them in Smallville. And this was another one of them.
And now everyone is up to speed on the sci-fi Luthor subplot of the season. Right? Everybody kind of knows what's going on, to a point. Or at least everybody knows all what we know. They don't know the whole story yet, neither do we. But
we're all caught up to speed. And then it cuts to the final scene of the episode after that, and it is Clark talking with Lana. And, you know, it's Lana being like, I guess I'm glad I told you about Adam, and then I didn't tell you because, I didn't tell you because I wanted to protect you or whatever. And then it's like, you can always talk to me, Lana. And then she's just pulls like a great line. She's like, yeah, that goes both ways, Clark. And I'm like,
he immediately walks off,
and it's like, you know, he can't take the heat, so yeah, he got out of there. He quite literally got out of the kitchen.
And then they made another point to be like, oh, what do you think was in that serum? And Clark's like, I have no idea. And he walks off, and the classic slow motion. I should have had a counter for that, right? Episodes that Clark walks away in slow motion. That's it.
Oh, we have a lot of stuff whenever confronted.
We have a song, Everything. Not that Everything by Lifehouse. Everything by Alanis Morissette. It's playing here. And to be honest, there were only a couple songs in the episode, and neither of them really stuck out to me. You know, usually there's at least one song where I'm like, yeah, that's the one. That's the one I'm going to use in the episode. That's the one on my mix CDs. You know, but this one was like, okay, sure. It didn't really leave an impression on me, is what I'm saying. Usually the music does.
Don't have that awesome early 2000s mix where like every song, every popular song from the 2000s was used in Smallville. And yeah, they just went with a nice little Alanis Morissette song.
Hey, Clark. What's bothering you, son? When I went to pick up the vial for Vince, Lex was there. He was talking to one of the scientists. From their conversation, it sounds like Lionel Luthor's behind all of it.
Now, why doesn't that surprise me?
Dad, when that serum got close to the kryptonite bomb, it reacted the same way as my blood.
So you're saying the serum...
I know. It sounds crazy, but I think that Lionel Luthor's found a way to use my blood to bring people back to life. If my blood can save lives, Maybe I should come forward. What if there's something inside me that could repair Dad's heart permanently?
Clark, your mother and I both know that you are going to save a lot of lives in this world. Even more than you have any idea.
The only life I'm interested in saving is yours.
You do. You save my life every day that you're with us. And we wouldn't trade that for a single moment without you.
Resurrection got an 8.0 out of 10 on IMDb, and the Superman homepage gave it a 4 out of 5. So, you know, high scores, or even relatively high scores, all things considered, for this episode. Billy, I ask you, what would you give Resurrection on the letter grade scale?
The letter grade scale. It is definitely, for me, a C+. Because it is just regular average episode. Two-thirds of the episode, a lot of it is heavy exposition and just obvious setup, you know. And then it doesn't get really interesting till the last third, you know, when Garrett has the bomb and everything. But I can't deny that it was shot really well. There are some good moments, like with Clark and Jonathan, and there is, like, maybe one or two with the brothers that I really liked. So it's not a terrible episode by any means, but it's not particularly, like, memorable. It's just it's a fine episode for this week, you know.
Yeah, so, I think I'm pretty much in line with you. I think you summed it up perfectly. There are lots of exposition, lots of scenes, just two people talking, lots of getting other characters up to speed with stuff that we already know. You know, so that's why a lot of the episode feels boring. We're not really discovering much of anything. There's other characters that are discovering stuff. Some really questionable plot holes, mainly the one with Garrett showing up, event showing up at the kid farm with no explanation.
We harped on that a lot.
I just cannot believe, like, that facility would just allow people they resurrect to run away. Like, how often does this happen, right? I mean, you know, I don't know. Oh, you know what? I think I just realized something for the first time talking about that plot hole. You think they only did that every, like, very rarely, right? Because Adam was a test subject, right?
Yeah.
And then just the last episode, Lionel decided Adam is out, you know? So do you think, like, he was the next Adam? Like, he was the Adam replacement?
Possibly.
One at a time. I can't believe I never thought of this before, but I guess they're just doing it one at a time. And this guy was, okay, well, Adam, he's discarded.
All these guys with these terrible livers.
Yeah, Lionel. Spoilers for what actually is the case, but Lionel's lucky that he found all these test subjects, right? I mean, what is it? These are young guys. They're not sitting drinking all day. I don't know how their liver goes bad so fast, right?
They must be drinking a lot.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Oh, see, but yeah. So I will give it a B minus then. So C+ for you.
Yeah.
B minus for me. So they're around the same ballpark, but I enjoy lots of moments in this episode. It's probably, I guess, more than some of its parts is what I would say. But we can move on to the tally board, because we have actually quite a few tallies here. We have a +2 for hospital visits. That brings us up to 43 hospital visits so far in the show.
No.
We have Jonathan and Vince, by the way, for those two.
Yeah.
We have a +1 for Chloe's unseen connections, her connection to Metropolis General, who told her about the organ donors. So that brings us up to 13. We have a +1 for Smallville High School student death for Garrett, who gets gunned down by the Smallville police force. So that's 11 so far. We have a +1 for the blue jacket, for the blue shirt, red jacket, the pseudo Superman costume. We have a +1 for that. We're at 12, which I will say is lower than I thought. But starting, you know, season 4 and 5 and, you know, 6 and 7, like,
he wears the red jacket and blue shirt
almost every episode.
It's going to go up.
It's going to go way up. Now, and then, of course, we get our movie plot as an episode +1. So that brings us to 6. And this would, of course, be the Denzel Washington movie John Q. I might post a trailer for it or something like that, so those who don't know would remember. But yeah, it literally came out a year or two before this episode. So it was fresh on my mind. Denzel is one of my favorite actors, probably my top 5 actors.
He's never had a bad performance. He hasn't been in, like, not everything he's been in has been great, but he's never been bad. He never phones it in.
Absolutely. He's not, say, Bruce Willis, who phones everything in since, like, 2000.
Yeah. Bruce Willis is just terrible.
Here's hoping he doesn't phone in Glass.
I really hope he better not, or else he's going to end up being, like, Shattered Glass.
What a threat. Let's bring
not for me, but from everybody else. Yeah, no, I wouldn't do that. I'm not a violent person.
No, I got you. No, I agree. Bruce Willis, like, I guess Looper he tried. Unbreakable is the only movie. Armageddon was 98. Unbreakable was, like, 2002 or 2000 was Unbreakable.
He tried a little bit in Death Wish, but not really.
Yeah, you know, I never saw Death Wish. I was like, oh, I might see that.
It's not that good. Just stick with the Charles Bronson version.
Literally, just the other day, I was in Target, and I saw it was on Blu-ray already. I was like, oh, that came out? So that came out in a blink of an eye. So, yeah, that's the thing about Bruce Willis. Like, he can be good when he chooses to do so, but he just phones everything in.
He just doesn't care anymore, and it's really sad.
Well, I am really excited about Glass, and I'm sure most superhero fans are.
I'm sure a lot of my Shyamalan fans are excited for
Glass. He's back. I'm very excited for Shyamalan because during The Village is when he got bad. Like halfway through The Village, I was like, oh, they're doing this? Oh, okay. And then
Lady in the Water.
Yeah. And then
Last Airbender is the biggest offense for me.
Then he came back. He did a movie called The Visit. It was a horror movie a couple of years ago. I didn't see it.
I was like, okay. It's not terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible. And then Split was amazing.
And then, of course, tying with Unbreakable, which was unexpected. I mean, that was those kind of you can't keep those kind of secrets in Hollywood anymore. So he's back with a twist.
It was Split and the Cloverfield franchise.
Here's a secret movie we shot. Here it is, guys. Enjoy. But anyway, all that to say, it was the kids. They called me Mr. Glass. And I'm really excited. I'm really excited about Glass. So. There you go. That's your Smallville tally board. Bechdel test, we're going to go ahead and call it a fail because we cannot count like three lines of dialogue between the two Lanas, as I like to call them, because another tool played Lana.
Yeah.
They don't get enough scenes together. They should get more. And that would help solve, that would help fix the Bechdel test if they got some more scenes. But unfortunately, this week they say fail. And no one said Resurrection this episode, as far as I could tell. Did you notice anyone say that?
Yeah, nobody actually said the title of the episode. I always look for that.
Resurrections are taking place this episode. No one says it, so it was disappointing.
No, there was a resurrection or something like that. No, it was just like, he came back from the dead and all that stuff.
I like what you said, though. This could have been Lazarus, and then Lazarus in season 2 could have been Resurrection. So they could a lot of Smallville episodes, you could just flip titles around it and do the same thing.
Yeah. As long as they don't call it The Return of Superman, I'm okay.
Well, you know, that's the thing about Smallville. You have to use one word, so that really limits them.
Very much so.
All right, Billy. Well, it's fun talking to you about this episode of Smallville, man. If people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BBusterBill, and you can find me on this app called Stardust, which is a app where you post 30-second reactions to trailers and movies, and it's great. And my account there is Bill Goatee Paul, P-O-L-L, and I'm having a blast with that. But yeah, you can just find me mainly on Twitter and just hit me up, and I love to talk about anything Superman, really.
Awesome, man. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at BoreOnZach. That's IBOREOVIDZACH. I'm also the host of another podcast, Standard Orbit, on the Trek FM network. You can find us on Twitter at TrekFM. We talk about all things old and new, Star Trek and Captain Kirk, the Enterprise over there. And as for the podcast here, you can find us at Always Smallville on Twitter with Les. You can find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville, and you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again, with one S. Well, that's going to do it for us this week on Always Hold On to Smallville. We'll be back next week talking Crisis. Yeah, I know when that title came out back in the day, we're like, oh, Crisis, this is like Infinite Earths, there's going to be red skies, there's going to be alternate universes. No, it's nothing like that. So don't get your hopes up, because, you know, when you're a DC Comics fan, you hear Crisis, that means something. But don't get your hopes up, guys, because it's nothing to do with that. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.